Hello, this is Michael Fanning, and I'm the host of the Windermere Coaching Minute. This is our quick form podcast where we'll talk to Windermere agents who bring creative ideas, power strategies, and successful routines to light. In each episode, we'll talk to real estate professionals to learn what they have done that have allowed them to be better than they were yesterday. Please enjoy our podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Fanning, the host of the Windermere Coaching Minute. And today with me, I have my wife, Stevie Fanning, along with Anders Ibsen. And he is from the greater Tacoma area with Windermere Real Estate. And Anders, you've been in the business now for 11 years, right?
Yes. Half of that, I was a full-time appraiser. I still retain my appraiser's license. And in 2018, I got my broker license. And a few years ago, my managing broker license. So I've been with Windermere for a little bit going on 6 years.
I love it. And I will tell the listeners that are listening today is one of the things I love about Anders is that he is very detailed oriented, which is really great today because we're going to be talking about the power of contingent offers, the difference in contingent offers. And what I love it is I've got Anders here, but I also have Stevie here, both of them practicing in real estate. So we should have a lot of good information for our listeners. So what would be great, Anders, if you'd start off for me is just tell us a little bit about, just give us so our listeners can understand, our agents can understand contingent offers.
Sure. So the contingent offer in the very simplest term is buying and selling at the same time. It means that you have to sell your current house in order to buy the next place. And one of the lesser known details that most of our clients don't know is that there are really, at least in Washington state, there are two different kinds of contingent offers. And they basically take the form of seller on the new place. Do I have to first accept an offer on my old place? And then that's what's called Form 22B, if you're using Northwest Multiple Listing Service forms. And then the other one is, hey, seller, I've already accepted an offer on my current place, and the offer I'm writing on your place is subject to me closing on the old place. And one of those, as you can imagine, is more competitive than the other, the why. So that's
the basic.
One of the questions why we do that in the first place is, why would you even want to do a contingent offer? And the reason being is there are a lot of people who are owners that want to either downsize or upsize. And so they have some equity, but there's something that just doesn't make sense about either just eating a second mortgage, which today's economy doesn't really make sense for a lot of people, or maybe using a HELOC or a bridge loan to take the equity from their current place. That may not make sense. They may not be able to have enough debt to get a loan on the new place, or maybe they bought FHA or VA and they just don't have the equity position on the old place. And so that may not make sense. Other people may sell first and just move in with family or move into an Airbnb, but that doesn't work for a lot of people. And if you have young kids, that sounds like just a recipe for a total nightmare. So the real appetite for some people for contingent offers comes from the ability of only having to move once and not having to take on any extra debt in doing so. You just have your one mortgage on your old place, assuming you have a mortgage, and then you just move on. So that's the innate attractiveness to it. As for what makes a good contingent offer, for me, it's really less about good and bad because that's so subjective based on what you're looking at and where your market is, your price point. I would say it's more about an aware contingent offer versus an unaware contingent offer, because it really comes down to the client's needs, what ecosystem you're in, and what gives you the best chance of success while also maximizing your options for your experience.
Yeah. And I would ask, so Stevie, in Idaho, is there any difference in terms of what Anders said about for in the Northwest?
Actually, we run very similarly to Washington in regards to contingent offers, pretty straight across the board there.
Yeah. So no really big difference. Anything you want to add to what he said?
No, I'm curious to hear what else he's got to say.
Okay. So let's talk about the first one where your home isn't even listed and you're going to put it on the market. So let's talk about that contingent offer first. And let's talk about some of the pros and cons around that.
Sure. So there are two different options there. So again, here in Washington State, or most of Washington, you're going to use a contract form called 22B, Bravo, and your home can be unlisted or it can already be listed by the time you write the offer. If it is unlisted, then you are time limited. You usually have about a week, unless you negotiate something longer. For some of my clients, I've negotiated as much as 2 weeks to get it listed. But sellers don't have patience for much more than that usually. And then you are obligated to get the home on the market by a certain date if it's not already on the market. And then you have a further obligation to get your home pending, to accept an offer on your old home by a certain date. The default is 45 days, which is very generous with, you know, timelines in today's market. If you're in a more competitive situation, or if it's just a negotiation between buyer and seller, then that timeline can certainly be shortened. If you really want to make the point that you mean business, and if you're pricing your home to sell, then something shorter, like 2 weeks, is certainly doable, just whatever the other side will agree to. And then once you do receive an offer, then as long as you're continuing on the path to closing, you're done with that contingency. You've satisfied it. And there are many other complexities and subtleties, but that's the basic gist of it. Why you would want to do that is, let's say that you're in a starter home. This is a situation where I think a lot of people are going to be doing more contingent style offers, depending on how mortgage rates go, is let's say you're in a starter home and it's a product that you know is going to sell, but you maybe have a growing family and you don't want to move twice. And maybe your equity position just doesn't allow you to leverage it to use something like a bridge loan, for instance. Having a situation where you are offering on the next place and you're saying that you will get an offer on your home by a date certain and time, that allows you to, again, just only pay that one mortgage. So you're not taking on any more debt. And your timeline, the closing timeline, a new place, this is really important with 22B forms, it is innately synced to the closing date on the new place. So that's the other appeal of 22B, is that you know what closing is going to look like. Because if the seller accepts your offer, if you have that form in your contract, then you are going to close on time. And if there are delays, if maybe you have to make some repairs on your current place to make the sale work, that's fine. Because your closing date on the new place is always going to be, usually it's 3 business days after the closing on the old place. And then maybe you can negotiate a 3-day rent back in the old place, or you can just modify it so you close on the same day with the new place. But that flexibility is already built into the purchase for you and for your living situation. So that's the real attractiveness. The disadvantage, of course, is that if you're in a multiple offer situation, then a 22B form is usually a pretty significant competitive disadvantage. It's not unwinnable. But if your situation requires you to, then you have to anticipate that and just insert that into your strategy. So if it's going to be competitive, then you would have to basically make everything else just absurdly awesome. You're going to have to overpay, frankly, on at least a little bit more on the purchase price side. Your contingencies will have to be more reasonable. So you'd probably have to pre-inspect the house, or just have a very just lightning fast inspection process, or just do things above and beyond what an already competitive offer would be, just for the seller to even consider that extra risk factor. Or the other strategic component is just target listings that are less likely to be competitive. So listings that have been on the market a little bit longer, but otherwise really meet the criteria for you. That's also a very valid tactic as well.
Yep. Anything different, any nuances you see that are different here in Idaho?
I don't think so. I think the one thing that I was thinking is certainly we're seeing more and more contingent offers in the market as qualification is a little bit harder and has interest rates are staying where they're at. We are seeing a lot more buyers have to offer contingent. And so it's interesting because there's a lot of agents in our market, I think, that have come in the last even 5 years that don't understand contingencies very well and don't understand how to negotiate those contingent offers. So it's been an interesting time in the market.
Yeah. And a lot of sellers who don't understand the benefits of accepting a contingent offer. That's the other component, Stevie, is that what a lot of sellers are maybe not being educated on by their listing broker. So to your point, I completely agree. There's just not enough experience on this topic in the industry, is that when you accept a contingent offer, that is 22B, that is subject to the old place getting an offer, you can still actively market your home. So your home is active-ish in a sense that it is not flagged as pending on the multiple listing service. It is flagged actually as contingent, CT. Which means that the seller can still receive showings and still receive offers. They're called second offers. And that's the seller's opportunity. And in a way, it's a buyer's risk because there's another call that came in there.
Oh, good.
So the added risk for the buyer, and you could say the opportunity for the seller accepting the contingent offer, is that let's say you write the offer, the seller accepts, and then you have a certain period of time to accept an offer. So long as you have not accepted an offer, you are vulnerable to a process called bumping. And it might be called something different in different states, but in Washington, bumping means that at any time before you accept an offer and give notice to the seller, there can be a second or a third or however many non-contingent buyers who can still offer on that same property. And if the seller chooses to, they can put them in second place. They can put them in a second buyer status. And once they're in that status, they can give you, the contingent buyer, what's called a bump notice, which means that the gloves have to come off, basically. You have to accept an offer on your home, usually within a week, within 5 business days. And if you do that, if you can perform, or if you waive all your contingencies. So if you say, you know what, I'm going to buy your house, regardless of if I can accept an offer in this time period, I'm waiving my financing, I'm waiving my inspection. So you can either give up all your contingencies and just buy the house regardless. And if you can't, then you risk your earnest money, basically. Or you can just try really hard, have an aggressive price change or something to get an offer accepted within that time frame. And if you cannot perform, and if the seller chooses, then they can bump out your offer. Then you get an earnest money refund. So your earnest money is still safe. But then the second person in line who's not contingent gets the home instead. So that is a risk to be wary of. That's why whenever you're planning for a contingent offer strategy, even less room for error than a typical offer strategy, because there are so many moving parts on both sides of the transaction. And until you have addressed that by accepting the offer, if you are 22B, then you have that potential vulnerability to a second non-contingent offer. But that's the opportunity for the seller at the same time, is that you're not giving up your home's marketability by accepting that contingent buyer. You can still market it. You can still accept offers. So there's really opportunity for everyone in a sense.
Something interesting, I think, Steve, this scenario is, you had said to me, is you have an offer that's contingent, and why are not other agents bringing an offer to the table when you're contingent? Talk to me a little bit about that. And maybe Anders can chime in on that aspect of it too.
Yeah, sure. Totally. So one thing that I see a lot is when a MLS listing is marked contingent, it is still active in the MLS. However, a lot of agents are detoured for some reason from showing them to their clients and or really wanting to deal with that type of transaction. And actually they're missing out on a massive opportunity, because what happens when, say, I've got a non-contingent buyer who may really love this home, it's a great opportunity for them, because we know that the sellers have an offer. I'm sure they'd love to accept a non-contingent offer, and there's no competition. And so that's a great opportunity for agents representing a buyer to be able to come in and have a great strategy to get your buyers a home they love.
It just reminds me of the market in general, right? Warren Buffett, what's his famous quote? You should be greedy when other people are fearful. You should be fearful when other people are greedy. And that's a textbook example of that. A contingent marked listing is a situation where it's a perfectly available property. People can offer on it, and the seller has every opportunity to take a look at your listing and potentially replace the current offer they're working with in favor of you, because you're not contingent. But it just doesn't occur to a lot of clients. And that's really because it doesn't occur to a lot of agents. And I think, frankly, that's just a matter of education and experience. Contingent offers are a very complicated beast. And a lot of people just, frankly, don't do enough business to be able to see how these things work in practice. Or maybe they just don't have firms investing in that education. But the opportunity is out there, even in very transitory markets like the one we're in right now.
Right. And I do think that at least has been my experience from just in other coaching clients we're working with, to seeing more contingent offers than we have in the past due to the lower inventory, the fact that we also have people that are selectively moving, not electively moving. And so, and then with things being a little bit more expensive, you're seeing that they're in a situation where saying, okay, we want to do something, but now we got to sell our house, but then we also want to buy. And then there's a lot of stress going on during that time too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, anything else on that side of it, where they have the home that's not quite listed yet, or it's going to be listed? Any other little words of wisdom, or Anders, anything on that topic?
Yeah, just like I said, it's less about good and bad because that's relative to the market you're in, the kind of property that you're selling, the kind of property you're buying. But it's more about being aware versus unaware. If you're aware of all the factors that make your situation, that make your offer competitive or less competitive, and just like any other offer strategy, just what sellers are looking for and what they're going to see as the red flags and risk factors, then you can proactively address them. And it's just more important to do that, even more so on a contingent offer, because there's that second aspect of your sale along with your purchase that you have to balance with it. So there's even less room for error. Contingent offers can be a really powerful tool to help someone for who might otherwise not be able to take that step, but there's an extra layer of expertise that's needed to make it work.
Yep. So let's talk about now. I've got my home listed, right? And it's under contract, and now, and we're writing contingent offer. What are some of the nuances there? Some slight differences.
Yeah. So in some ways it's a lot cleaner, in some ways it's more difficult. So in Washington with the Northwest MLS forms, that's called a 22Q offer. And from a competitive market standpoint, it's going to be a lot easier for you as a buyer because you can tell that seller that you are already under contract. You've maybe already passed the inspection and you can give them a copy of the satisfied inspection response 35R form, any number of those things, right? Just to prove that, hey, we're a sure bet. Because what are the two things sellers care about? They care about net proceeds and they care about can this person close. Those are the main things, right? And so if you can make a compelling argument on both sides, then that really helps your cause. The challenge with 22Q is that the flexibility is gone compared to 22B. So with the, hey, seller, accept my offer and I'll get an offer on my place. From a negotiating perspective, you're asking the seller to take on a lot of risk. So that means that they're going to want something in return, or just means you're going to have a harder time getting your offer accepted if there's someone else. But once you are under contract, then it's really a buyer-friendly form because all that timeline flexibility is in your court. Because if you experience delays and if there's something that slows you down on your sale, then that's okay. That is baked into the timeline, is baked into the process for your acquisition of a new place. Whereas with the I'm already pending and I want your place form 22Q, it's much more rigid. You have to close on your old place before you close on the new place. And it's just a single date. Seller, I will close by this date. And if you can't, then you have to figure something out. You have to negotiate with seller. Seller is not obligated to do so. They can just say no, and then it terminates and you get your earnest money. Maybe they just received maybe they have a backup offer in hand and it's way more awesome than yours. And they can't wait to see if you fail because they get to make more money and have a more awesome experience. So that's the risk factor, is just not being able to stay to your predetermined timeline. And in some ways, it's the exact same plan as with 22B. You just have to have a really dialed in sales side aspect to your strategy. And you just have to utterly control the things that you can control. And there's just a lot less room to screw off and to just take things for granted. You have to have a really tight operation to make sure that you can stay on time.
Is that similar to that same situation in Idaho?
It is, yeah, very similar. And one thing I'm just going to add here is it is incredibly important to be educated about contingencies and understand how to negotiate through contingencies, regardless of whether you're representing the seller or the buyer in that situation, because just like we've talked about, the difference in these two scenarios does require a different expertise and a different skill set in negotiation. And so I would highly encourage agents that have never worked a contingent transaction or that are maybe new to the business to really educate yourself, maybe with your broker or your coach, to really understand the ins and outs of these transactions and how you can best provide value for your client.
Yep. So Anders, in your process, right? So when you have a buyer that comes to you, do you have in your process where you educate them on buy, sell, and what that means? And walk them through, give me a little idea about that, about just how you educate your client to give them kind of some framework of what you're about to embark upon and where they can be more in a power position with their offer or a need position. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. So the key is to not overwhelm whenever you're dealing with anyone, whether they're doctors and engineers or artists or creatives or any kind of personality. The key is to at least start the process with one or two key pieces of information and then just build it off from there, because when you do that, it builds clarity and confidence, and then the best path for them, usually it becomes much more clear. Versus if you say, here are the 20 different options you can do, then anyone will shut down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And so instead of going through pure the two contingency forms, or you could use a HELOC, or you could use a bridge loan, right? That's a recipe for disaster. I usually start, if it's buy sell, just with obvious stuff, like what's your equity position based on your principal in it? Because doesn't that determine right. what makes the most sense for them? If they have awesome equity, then don't do a contingent form. Just use a bridge loan and just move once. The seller will like you better. You'll like yourself better. Your kids will like you better, et cetera, right? Et cetera. Or any number of different things. So that's usually where I start, is just really basic high level information that either opens or closes doors, because you should never have more than three or four doors open at once. That's just chaos. And then just have them go through a door, a client, and then based on that, a couple other doors open, and just they'll follow their own process based on just quality, objective information you can provide. And the same thing with timeline too. Some people will realize that, oh, I have to hustle to get everything ready. Or conversely, some people really might want to take their time because I have these issues in the house, and based on the data you're showing me, the buyers are really going to care about this. So I should really get this right the first attempt, especially if I'm going to be contingent, because there's zero room for error. So I would say just help them understand their own situation first with really pertinent, just crisp, clean information, with things like, what is their equity position based on the likely value range? How competitive will their house be based on what the expectations of buyers in their marketplace are? Is it totally dialed in? Is it a fixer? Is it dated and in need of some love? Does it just need some elbow grease? Or is it just meticulous and it just needs a little bit of staging? What is their occupancy situation going to be like? Are they going to be living in the house during, and what implication will it have for showings, availability, their mental health, things like that? Or can they live with family or Airbnb while it's being listed? So just walking through what makes the most sense for their own situation, and then just giving them pros and cons and probabilities. And then they can talk themselves through their plan, and then you just help them execute their plan.
Yeah, no, I love that. Steve, anything for you in terms of that area?
Yeah, just to add to Anders, is super important to go through your buyer process. So your buyer process is going to allow you to really, truly understand the needs of your seller or buyer, and really understand what their motivation is and what their goal is. And that's really to help you educate them in regards to a strategy around contingency in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one other topic, and I know that Stevie had this experience, and I don't know if you've experienced it, but when you are the listing agent that is representing the seller and you've got a contingent buyer, what's your expectation of that buyer's agent in communicating with you as you're going through the process with the timelines and getting things accomplished, as that seller's sitting there panicking a little bit? And if you were on the other side, if you're a buyer's agent, how often are you trying to communicate effectively with that listing agent?
Yeah, our industry can do a lot better job here, as you can see from my facial expression here. In a perfect world, this is one of my isms that I tell my clients, but it's just as pertinent for the cross agent. And that is, you should hear from me more than I'm hearing from you.
Yep.
So if you think about it, right, the other side in a way is a client, right? You want them to be happy. You want them to be in a good state of mind, because they'll make better decisions. If it's acrimonious and everything is just a fight, then it might just come down to the wire, and you might actually, heaven forbid, need them for something. And then that can make the difference. There are certainly some zero-sum things as part of a transaction, price, certain inspection items. But I'd say 50-50 is collaborative and just needs to have two rational adults working together on that. And the more small touches and the status of something needed for it to close is anything but small, that you can just provide as a good courtesy. Hey, just letting you know, we're dropping the price to attract more people. We're going to have an open house this weekend. I'll let you know if we have any offers or any rumblings of offers, just to let you know. Okay, cool. Just a regular communication structure, or have an assistant or someone who can do that for you, just so that they know what they can expect. That's everything. And that stability that you can provide, that ultimately just comes back to your client.
I agree. Steve, anything you want to add to that?
Oh man, this is such a painful topic, because I just went through this in a transaction with very little communication. And as the listing agent, I will say that the sellers are very uneasy about the offer already, especially when mm-hmm. the home's not under contract. And so if, as a representative for the buyer, if you can communicate more often than not and really make sure that the seller understands where you're at in the process, it's going to really ease their mind and potentially deter them from continuing to market it and wanting to get other offers and trying to boot you out. So it's, regardless, on both sides, communication is key and absolutely necessary.
And I also, yeah. Trust is a big one too, right? So let's say that they want to come to you and ask for an extension, and they haven't been communicating with you at all through the entire process. All of a sudden that trust goes down, and now they're sitting there going, well, they're not even communicating with us. I don't even know if they're being honest because we don't know what's happening. Why would I want to continue this? Why don't we just let this thing die and put it back on the market? Or the market.
Or they'll continue it, but it'll cost you. Like, so
Pay up.
So, I mean, just treat them like a seller, right? We lavish our sellers with, here's some great data. Here's a comparative market analysis that proves the likeliest value range. Here's our plan. Here's my plan for doing this. Why on earth wouldn't you make that part of your offer strategy and say, hey, we're even going to price this a bit more aggressively. The buyer is motivated to sell. He wants to make this work. Here's our media. Here's what the beautiful photography and staging is going to look like on his house. We're planning on blank open houses the first weekend. Here's our comparative market analysis. Here's what similar homes sell for. As you can see, we're selling at a bit of a discount so we can get more attention, and just walk them through your plan so that they know there is a plan at all. And that's the biggest stumbling block for our industry is not even just lack of communication, but just the lack of plans, just everything being so ad hoc and helter-skelter. And if you can just meet that standard and just have a plan and show it to people, then that's half the battle.
I think for our listeners, if you are an agent listening to this today, I think a couple things come to mind for me. One is that, remember, if you're making a contingent offer, you're representing the buyer, understand you're making an offer to another skilled real estate agent that also has the ability to go do a comparative market analysis if they wanted to on that home that's being put on the market, where if that's coming in over the market, you're weakening that buyer's position in the eyes of that listing agent who's going to be educating the seller. Would you agree with that?
Totally. And furthermore, getting back to the seller's perspective on receiving contingent offers, keep in mind that you can absolutely negotiate on the terms of that buyer's listing. So it's not unheard of for a listing broker to advise a seller to counter a buyer's offer saying, all right, cool, I'll accept your offer. If buyer's listing does not receive an offer within blank days, list price shall be reduced to blank. And then successive steps like that. So you can call their bluff in a way like, all right, cool, game on. We'd like to work with you. However, we want to know that you're actually serious about making this work. So if you don't receive an offer in a certain period of time, because based on my analysis or based on the data you gave me, the typical home in this price range is usually under contract within, let's say, 2 weeks. 2 weeks pass, no offer. Great. You're changing your list price to blank and then just kind of tie their hands. And it's a good barometer for how serious they are, what kind of partner they're going to be in the transaction, if they agree or if they agree somewhat, maybe counter a little, then that's an indicator. That means they might be a good partner to do the dance with. And if they're unrealistic or if they're just recalcitrant, then you better figure that out on the front end than after the fact when you're having to work with them.
Exactly. Anything on that?
I love that. I think that's a great point, because with the lack of education sometimes in our industry, a lot of agents don't understand that you can negotiate on the terms of your buyer's home sale.
Some other person's listing. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And you absolutely should, because it's a protection for your seller. It is definitely a better way to navigate that situation.
And if you're back to the buyer, so notice how it's so ping pongy. Like, this is how contingent offers work. And if it's friendly ping pongy, like how me and Stevie and Mike are doing, then that's a transaction that will close. And that's something that will just make for happy clients and referred business and all the great things that we talk about. On the buy side, if you're super motivated and this, maybe it's a multiple offer situation, or maybe it's day one and you want to prevent it from being a multiple offer situation, and you maybe overprice your offer bid and do other things to spice it up, but maybe you're saving your buyer more money in the long run by not having to escalate or just thinking of a few different situations, you could very well just put that in your other section of your 22B form. You could say, if buyer's listing does not receive an offer by day blank of the listing, buyer's list price to be reduced to blank. And you could initiate that yourself as a buyer. You can do that on the front end and just use that to convey strength and seriousness to the selling side without having to wait for a counter. That's the other implication. Really, this is something I get a lot of flack for sometimes from other realtors, but bidding wars are not hard to win, assuming that you can win them, right? But that's where aware versus unaware comes from. But the biggest predictors of getting your offer accepted are not, are you a cash buyer, an institutional investor, or just all these outside things. It's, do you have awareness of what it's going to take to win that house and whether or not you can win the house? And the second predictor is the emotional preparedness of the client. That's both of which are the product of the agent and the agent's competency. Because if you're only pre-approved for 450 and you see a beautiful, too good to be true house priced at 449, and there's like a stack of business cards in the kitchen, should you be offering on that house? So I would much rather just let people down gently on the front end and, hey, maybe we can wait and see what happens to that house in a week, or we can look at these other houses that have been on for 10 days or 15 days or 20 days and just set those realistic expectations. But having just an awareness of what it takes to win and just knowing our situation, can we win? And then just having a good process, having a good education of the client to the point where the client is confident to actually do what it takes to win. Those are buyers who don't have to offer 10 times to win a house and become a homeowner by accident. Those are buyers who win the first or second time.
I think it's gauging what their appetite is, right? What their appetite is for sticking with this and where they want to be. And you find that out through your consultation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Steve, anything on that?
I love it.
So here's one thing that comes to mind. So I'm listening to both of you talk, and I heard you say the word competence. And I think for our listeners who are non-real estate agents, who are just the general public, here's what I want you to hear. It's very important that you have a competent real estate agent, but not just on your side, but also on the other side, because it takes
competent
agents to really collectively negotiate together so that there's success on either side. And I think in this day and age, I think we have, unfortunately, there's agents out there that aren't competent. And it's and you know who gets damaged? The client, right?
And furthermore, I would say that the competence of the other hand, of the other side, in a very indirect way, but it's still pertinent, that is still the responsibility of your side. Because you should have enough knowledge and work with someone, if you're a client, who has enough market knowledge, enough experience to be able to foresee, oh, that agent's trouble. Or conversely, oh, I closed three transactions with that person over the years. They're awesome. They're honest. They're a good player. You know, they'll help us out if need be. And that's just experience as well as just market knowledge. But it's also strategy too, because let's say you're in a multiple offer situation representing seller. There's five offers that come in, let's say. There could be an offer that objectively is maybe the highest price. Maybe they've pre-inspected or they have other things on paper. The agent is just a chaotic nightmare, right? And right. You've had a direct experience and that reputation precedes them. How many situations have you been in where you accept something that's just beautiful on paper and then it just crumbles to dust in front of you, right? Or at least inform the client so they're aware of that risk factor and they can knowingly make that choice. Or even on the buy side, if you're dealing with a problematic listing broker, advise them and then just tailor the offer accordingly if once informed they want to do it. Or conversely, maybe it's a cool listing broker, you've worked with them, and I don't know about you, Stevie, but I've been in situations before where my buyer wrote the offer that was not the strongest on paper, but it still got accepted because the other broker really wanted to work with me. And then they said, yeah, maybe if we can tweak a few things here and there, because I'd really like to work with you if possible. Do you think your buyer's cool with that? Oh, yeah, sure. Let me talk to him. And isn't that such a savings? Isn't that such a value to provide to your client? Is not even just your knowledge and your professional expertise and your understanding of the nuances of the marketplace, but just your reputational worth as a player in the marketplace. That's strategic in the sense of how do we anticipate what's likeliest to happen? But it's also just who you are and the value you bring and how you make the client feel about the process.
That's super important. It's a really big deal to be able to play with anybody in the industry. And that's just all about how you show up. It's all about how you provide value, not only for your clients, but for other professionals in the industry. So I love that you said that.
So to put a bow on this, to wrap it up, here's what I want the agents that are listening to this podcast and listening to Stevie, listening to Anders talk. You may be sitting there and going, I've only been in the business for 6 months and I don't have the depth of knowledge that maybe a Stevie has or Anders has. One of the things is, you know, if you're in a great office, there's going to be great education. There's going to be agents like these two that you can talk to, or you can run ideas by, or you can get coached, or you can get a mentor, but don't just try to wing it. And I think, unfortunately, we have a lot of agents sometimes that are just out there that are trying to conduct one of the biggest transactions in somebody's life that has a lot of moving parts and a lot of complexity, and they're not serving their client well. So one of the things I can tell you is practice, learn as much as you can. Be in a great environment that is collaborative. You two want to add to that?
Stevie, you want to start?
I was just going to say spot on.
Okay, fine. Yes, to everything there. I mean, I love my firm. I'm with a Windermere firm out here in the Tacoma area, Windermere Professional Partners. And from day one, it's been just such a nurturing, just warm environment, which isn't to say it's all kumbaya. Sometimes we compete with each other for listings, and that's totally normal. But there's high bar competition where it's just about who brings the best value and who learns and who can just bring back and do it a second time. And then there's underhanded competition where it's just win at all costs, damn the relationship. And that's not what we're about. Right. A very strong emphasis on professional development. We have a contract law class basically every week. And that's something I've noticed with clients is that understanding the contract forms, which change constantly, and they're going to do a lot of changing and potentially based on this NAR settlement that we're not talking about at all. A lot of us aren't actually, but those of us who take the business seriously are, is it's not just about being savvy as a negotiator. That certainly helps, but it's about educating and building confidence and trust with the client, because a lot of my in-office meetings with people, even if it's just a, hey, we're just getting started consultation, or if it's like, hey, we're ready to go, what's this house worth? How do we do this next step? A big part of that is usually at least somewhat of an overview on these different forms. Like if they're a contingent, for example, I'm absolutely going to show them the two different contingent contract forms, or how does a financing contingency work? How are condos different than single family homes? Things like that. And that's all the firm culture. That's all a product of, does your firm take this stuff seriously, or do they just send you to the wolves? And what's their business model? And that's the deeper question, right? Is your firm dedicated to producing really productive, successful agents where they expect you to be full time and make this your life path? Or is this just spending money and just do a few transactions per year and just call it good? Unfortunately, the majority of the industry is. So it's ultimately the experience that the client has, but it starts with the firm culture, the business expectations, and are you just a valuable investment, or are you just a monthly fee source?
Yep, exactly. A desk filler, we used to
call. Yes.
Yep, exactly. Hey, Anders, I want to thank you for taking the time today. And I do, if somebody wanted to reach out to you to ask you more questions about this topic or kind of pick your brain, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Sure. You're welcome to go to my website anytime. It's just my name, AndersIbsenHolmes.com. You can also call or text me. I don't know if my information is going to be on the screen here. Just go that route. And don't be a stranger. Love to hear from you.
Yeah. And I'll drop your contact information in the show notes as well, Stevie, if they want to get a hold of you the best way.
For me, just email is great. So StevieFanning@gmail.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Hey, the two of you, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today. For our listeners, I will say this. If you like the content that we're putting out there, please let us know. Give us a rating. It really helps us. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, you can email me directly at fanning@windermere.com. I'm happy to take your suggestions. And we always end these like we always do, saying be awesome and help somebody, make it a great day. And Anders, Stevie, thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, we want to thank you for listening to our Windermere Coaching Minute. We hope you found this content helpful. If you did, please feel free to share it and give us a rating. And we'll always end our podcast by saying, be awesome and help somebody, and make it a great day.